T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lengwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you feel when you share that love with others. As we do each week, we begin with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination, hopefully a kind of platform for what we're going to talk about this evening. Story of faith and imagination. A group of men gathered around Jesus on what was a peaceful and quiet day. Even though the sun beat down upon them, there was no breeze to cool them. They did not complain because they were pleased just to be with Jesus. They knew he would answer their questions and comfort them, even though he was tired from his travels that day. One old man came up to Jesus, placed his arm on his shoulder, and said, "I am tired. I'm old and I'm worn. But before I close my eyes, never to open them again, I would like to ask you this question and be comforted by your answer." Jesus nodded, and the old man asked Jesus, "How can one overcome great suffering?" Jesus sighed and responded, "Old man, you have seen much during your life." The old man shook his head that he had and then said, "The greatest sorrow in my life, Master, was when both of my sons died. I was left with no one because my wife could not handle their death. And 2 months to the day of their death, my wife was taken also. I have no more tears to shed, but I live each day with a heavy heart." Jesus said, "I will try to comfort you, but remember, we are only on this earth for such a short period of time." "Ah," the man said quickly, "but I have already lived many, many years." "Yes," Jesus responded, "but you had the comfort of both your 2 sons and your wife, whom you love so dearly. They were gifts to you. Remember, you must learn to balance the good and the bad in life. Think of all the beautiful gifts you have been given, the people in your life, the world all around you, especially the grain that grows in your fields and all the people it has fed for so many years. And think about the love your wife gave you. Be grateful each day as the sun rises. Be grateful for the rain that refreshes your crops and makes them grow. Be grateful for the comfort and coolness of the night. Be grateful for the food that satisfies your hunger and the water that quenches your thirst." The old man nodded and said, "Master, you are right. They did give me great comfort and love, but they were taken away from me too soon." Jesus said, "It was their time. And when your time comes, you must go as all of us must. But again, I tell you, strike a balance between what has been good in your life, what has been given to you, and the many struggles you have had along the path of life with as many stones. Do this, and you will see that the goodness and love outweigh the pain, the sorrow, and the suffering we must all face in life." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening is one of 3 editors who have gathered readings for a book titled The Way of Suffering, Readings for an Enlightened Life. And he writes partially in the introduction to the book, We live in a dualistic world of good and bad, pleasure and pain, darkness and light. We can't have one side of the coin without the other. One will follow the other as surely as a black and white horror film follows a technicolor fairy tale at this crazy drive-in movie theater we call the world. We all scream many times in life, not for ice cream, but for an end to our bouts of suffering. Buddha observed that suffering in this world is inevitable, the natural result of our insatiable desires, our wanting this and not wanting that, or not getting what we want or getting what we want. The enlightened response to suffering, said Buddha, was compassion and loving kindness to ourselves as well as others. Jesus showered compassion on all who suffered and raised the dead and healed the sick and above all showed us all that we, like him, could transcend sufferings. Quote, in this world you shall have trials and tribulations, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world, close quote from the Gospel of John. Jesus went on to emphasize that whatever he did, we could do also. To overcome the world is to rise above it with our feet on the ground, to realize that in truth, quote, we live and move and have our being in God, close quote. God is not a magic man in a place in the sky, but always, everywhere active, unconditional love in which there is no change or shifting shadow. The remedies of this world are counterfeit. Only perfect love can cast out fear, and that love is nearer to us than hands and feet. It is the ground of our being. The author of these words and our special guest this evening is Michael Leach. He is a publisher emeritus of Orbis Books and author of many books himself, including Seeing, Soul Seeing, Light, Love, Forgiveness. We talked with him about this book in March of 2019. And he told us earlier that the church exists to tell stories in another group, the collection from another book, Why Stay Catholic. And I'm so really always happy to have him because he was ahead of Orbis Books when the book that you hear, the story such as I read this evening, Stories of Jesus, A Gospel of Faith and Imagination, some 200 of the 1,000 were printed and published. Michael Leach, welcome back to Amplify.
Ron, it's so good to be back with you, and I can't tell you how much I just loved your story that you told a few minutes ago, and thanks for reading from my intro, and thanks for letting me publish your book a few years ago. It was a wonderful book.
Thank you very much. Let's begin with the question, why did you decide to do a book about suffering? You've talked about so many other things in the past, as I noted, love and forgiveness, light and love. Why a book about suffering?
Well, you know, that's the question that I've been wrestling with since I was a kid, and I think we all have, because there's one thing that's certain in life, and that's suffering. Nobody gets out of this thing alive. Nobody gets out of this thing without pain. And we all suffer, whether we're rich or poor, strong or weak. And that's the nature of this world. And yet we have the example of Jesus who came and was like us and who suffered even unto death on the cross. And yet Jesus said to us, in this world you will have trials and tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. And, you know, he also said later, what's true of me can be true of you, and you could even do greater things. Well, we don't do so well with our sufferings, but we do learn empathy and compassion. And I just wanted to put a book together that wouldn't answer the question, why do we suffer? Because we suffer, period.
Yes.
But it would point in the direction of some sort of healing, some sort of peace, some sort of gratitude, some sort of understanding, and compassion for others. And so in a way, it was a life project that began when I was little. And
yes.
It kind of culminated in this book where I put together readings, stuff that I had read, essays, fiction, poetry, all sorts of things from great writers and from friends. And so it's got about 50 chapters of essays and stories and poems. And I like to think of them kind of like the way the Zen master said, the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. Well, these stories point in the direction of God. They're not God, but they are kind of compass arrows that can lead us to the God of love who can heal all our wounds. So it's meant to, you know, cheer people and to give people strength and comfort.
Oh, I can. I looked at my text for from the past interviews we did and pulled out some of the quotes that came from those reflections. God is everywhere. What could be more comforting? The church may not always be there for us, but God is. That's all that matters. They fit with the theme of suffering, too. God is always finding us. God hugs us. We are encircled by the arms of the mystery of God. Nothing can separate us from one another. We are literally one with one another. Quote from Augustine, God has one son on earth without sin, but never one without suffering. There's a big difference between knowing God and knowing about God. From Jardin, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And the remarkable union of body, mind, and soul. And I'll end with this one because it's what we're about to talk about. The church exists to tell stories. Beautiful things again. And people are going to find the same kind of words that are going to touch their soul through
this
particular
book. Well, thank you, Ron.
I mean,
for me, that's the only reason, especially at this time of my life when, you know, I'm retired and so forth. I published about 3,000 books and edited over 1,000. And every one I did, you know, I hoped would have a positive, you know, beneficial effect on the reader.
Yes.
And I don't know if they did or not. That's up to God. But that's the whole purpose of this book, The Way of Suffering, is to have that beneficial effect. That's the only reason I put it together.
Tell us a little bit about how it's structured. There are three parts. No easy answers, out of darkness to light, and from light and love. Why that kind of division? It says something about the contents of this book, of course.
Yeah, I wanted to be totally honest and not give bromides. When people suffer, often we'll hear people say to us, and perhaps we have said, you know, God never gives us more than we can handle, for instance. Or if a baby dies, they say, oh, you know, God couldn't wait to have the baby in heaven. Well, those answers don't satisfy. They make us feel worse. And so we need to know that God does not want to punish us. God does not want to hurt us. God wants to give us, according to the Epistle of James, every pleasing thing. And so we have to start with two premises. Number one, that God is on our side. And number two, that in this world, this dream of bodies we're going through for a short period of time, there will be suffering. And so the first part of the book, No Easy Answers, is just totally honest. It has stories of people who have suffered, but all of them conclude with a direction pointing towards towards love. Like the first story is from a friend of mine, Therese Borchardt, a beautiful young woman. She was in her 30s, and throughout her life, she suffered from chronic depression. She had two wonderful children, a wonderful husband, and yet she was constantly depressed. And in her mid-30s, she had a nervous breakdown, and her husband took her to Johns Hopkins Hospital, and she was terrified. And she writes, until I saw Jesus. In the lobby of Johns Hopkins, there's a 10.5-foot tall marble statue of Jesus. His arms are extended toward anyone who would come into Johns Hopkins in desperate need of healing. And it has an inscription run in capital letters on the pedestal that reads, come unto me all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Mm-hmm. And in the story, first-person story, Jesus writes that when she saw that, she thought of the hemorrhaging woman in the Gospel of Mark who had bled for 12 years and endured so much under many physicians, just like Dries did, many therapists, and she had spent all that she had, and she was no better. But by touching the hem of Jesus' cloak, she was healed, and her faith was so great, it says. And what happened was Jesus, in that statue, spoke to Teresa's heart, and she said, "I believe Jesus," imagining herself touching the hem of his real robe. "I believe," she said, and then she wept at his feet. And to me, that beautiful story exemplifies that the beginning of our healing is to surrender ourselves to Jesus, who wants more for us than we can want for ourselves. When we say that, you know, "God's will, thy will be done," it's not that his will is for us to suffer, it's his will that I be healed. But first we have to forget about our old, you know, bromides and cures and so forth, although we go through the cures of the world because, you know, this is where we happen to be. But ultimately, it's surrendering ourselves to the loving will of God that will certainly bring us peace and many, many times, you know, even leads to miracles in our life.
Right. And the second story that follows that is poses the question, why is there suffering? It's written by Father James Martin, a Jesuit, who's been a guest on this program a couple of times, and he raises the question, why do we suffer? And I'm just going to read parts of this particular reflection. Why do we suffer? That immense question, or the quote-unquote problem of evil, has bedeviled theologians, saints, mystics, all believers for thousands of years. The question can also be framed as, how could a good God allow suffering? And he says, first, we have to admit that none of the answers to why do we suffer can completely satisfy us when faced with real suffering, our own and that of others. Second, he writes, we have to admit that belief in God may mean belief in a God whose ways will always remain mysterious. A little later, he writes, while there are no definitive answers to the question of suffering, and while we may never fully understand it, there are what you might call, quote-unquote, perspectives offered by the Jewish and Christian traditions. Because, of course, God is revealing so much to everyone, and whatever it is that they believe, whatever religious tradition they come from. Jesus, who had suffered intensely in his life, could be, through my relationship in prayer with them, someone who understood my trials, small though they may be, and who could accompany me in them. When I accepted the reality of suffering, in vulnerability, in poverty of spirit, in brokenness, we are often able to meet God in new and unexpected ways. Perhaps this is because we are more open to God's presence. When our defenses are down, when we have nothing left, we are more open. This is why people who suffer are sometimes seen as becoming more religious or spiritual. They are not becoming more irrational. And he writes a little later, moreover, my suffering is not yours, nor are my own perspectives on suffering meant to be yours. Just as every believer must find a personal path to God, so must he or she find personal perspective on suffering. And he has a story about this elderly nun that's beautiful, and he's talking, he has a couple stories within it, and he writes, besides the idea that suffering can sometimes open us up to new ways of experiencing God, this is theological insight that I find most helpful in times of pain. The image of God who has suffered, the God who shares our grief, the God who understands. Much in the same way you instinctively turn to a friend who has already gone through the same trial you are facing, you can easily turn to Jesus in prayer who suffered. So we're going to take this first break, and we're going to come back and continue our discussion about the way of suffering. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Michael Leach. We're talking about his latest book. He's one of three editors, The Way of Suffering, subtitled Readings for an Enlightened Life. And Mike, if you could, I'd like you to talk about your own story. It's the only story that, the only reflection that you've made in the book, and it's titled, It's Okay to Despair and Swear at God. And you bring your wife, Vicky, into it, who last time was right next to you, wasn't able to be talking in some way. We knew of her presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my wife has Alzheimer's, Ron.
Yes.
And she was diagnosed 18 years ago. And first of all, for all the folks out there who have a loved one with Alzheimer's, please let me share with you that the hardest part is the first couple of years when you're faced with it and you think, oh, my God, how am I going to be able to take care of her? You know, she won't be able to talk or walk or hold a spoon. And that's the greatest suffering, because it's all thinking about what might be. And meanwhile, in those first few years, it's not so bad. There's just forgetfulness, that's all. That's no big deal. And then when you get to the point, like I have many, many years later, when de facto she can't walk or talk or hold us, it's not that at all. You face it, and you find each opportunity, each moment, an opportunity to be loving. And you meet needs on a spot where you're standing. So I read a story, It's Okay to Despair and Swear at God, about how it was kind of in the middle, or a little after the beginning. It was like Job, you know. Job swore at God.
Yes.
He was really, you know, suffering tremendously, and despair gripped him too. So I write about a day when she lost control over her bowels, and, you know, she pooped over the floor, and it was here, there, and everywhere. They were like vandals following her. And I said, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? I'm trying to help you, because she was resisting. She was so embarrassed. And then I just yelled, you're killing me. And then I just felt so awful. And I realized that I was angry. And I was only angry at her because I was really angry at God for what I thought allowing such a thing to happen. And it was just so difficult. But I realized finally, after I hugged her, and hugging is really a great, great healing thing, I realized the only thing I could do was surrender to the reality of this is the way it is right now. And where is God? Well, God is with me in my suffering. He's right in the middle of my suffering. And that's when I realized that the prayer of surrender, like Jesus' last words, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit, is the best prayer for when I'm suffering. I remember early on in Alzheimer's, I'd be driving to work, Ron, and I'd just be thinking about it. And I would get angry at God and swear at God. Well, that didn't do anything. It just made me more angry. But then as I prayed and I read and I got older, I realized, as we said before, God's will for me is nothing but good. He doesn't want me to suffer. He doesn't want Vicky to suffer. And there's no reason we have to suffer. We suffer not from the Alzheimer's, but from our thoughts about it, from our reactions to it. And the only response is to be loving and to surrender. I think I write in the chapter that the prayer of surrender brings us peace, brings us rest. It stops us from shuffling the cards of guilt and sin and fear in our heads like a stacked deck. And we hand our worries over to the real God, not the God who gives us suffering, you know, to purify us. No, God doesn't play games. God just wants us to be happy, and there's no other way but to say, God, thy will be done, and then you go with it. And, you know, I make Vicky laugh every day. She doesn't speak, except like in tongues or like a toddler you know, just syllables, but she laughs, Ron.
Yes.
And I realize a lot of old folks with Alzheimer's, they, you know, do have periods of when they are quite angry. My heart goes out to all of those people. And that's another thing that suffering brings us, is empathy for others who suffer. But I feel very fortunate that, you know, we've been married 53 years, and this is a great time in our life. And all of Vicky's needs are met before she even asks. Vicky's not unhappy. You know, she has Alzheimer's. Uh-huh. We're around in a wheelchair. We go here. We go there. I talk to her. We eat. You know, we watch TV. We do what old people do. You know, we're only taught that this is an abnormal way of living. It's not normal. Well, it is normal. It's in the range of normal. You know, we talk about the range of autism, you know, the range of everything. A tree gets real old and gets big bumps and dies and branches fall. It's normal. So I think the only way through this, to transcend it, to rise above it, is to realize it doesn't have to bring pain. Suffering can just be suffering, and we don't have to put this value on it of good or bad. We could just be loving moment by moment, and that's why I wanted to tell part of my story.
And the final words of your story are, and now and then have a laugh at the folly of being human. There's no other way. Try it. So
yeah. Try it, guys out there.
Yeah.
Well, have a laugh. It's okay.
Yes.
Gotta see, you know, somebody wrote about the human mockery. Our human lives are a mockery. And you quoted Teilhard de Chardin, who said, we are not, you know, human beings trying to become spiritual. We are spiritual beings, you know, trying to overcome our thought of being human. Everybody thinks Oprah said that, and I love Oprah, but it was Teilhard de Chardin. We have to laugh at the human mockery and just realize that we live and move and have our being in love. God is love, and we live and move in love, and we go with the love, and things aren't so bad. But you got to stick to it. You got to stick to it and commit to it, not with a stern face and a, you know, a big wrinkled up forehead. You stick with it calmly and with a smile and a laugh, and things aren't so bad, and God brings us peace.
And there is a story on page 74 that follows up, I think, to exactly what you just said, and it's titled "Love Leads to Suffering, but we take the risk to love because we must." And she begins by writing, "God never promised us that we would not suffer. Those words struck a painful but truthful chord in me when a friend uttered them as we stood talking at the wake of a 27-year-old woman, a mother of a one-year-old and wife who died of cancer too young." And so she talks about how she believes that the only antidote to the brokenness of the world, and we certainly live in such a world now, if we haven't always to some degree, is to surrender to love, that we have to let love act in us and through us, even when we know that it may ultimately lead to heartbreak. And there's so much that we can learn from our suffering, even deeper love that... And so she says, we take the risk again and again to love other human beings despite their tendency to disappoint and to die, and to love God, who has enabled us to love by first loving us.
And you know, Ron,
yeah,
you know, God we know is love. And, you know, so when we love God, we're loving the love of loving. I mean, and we're being like God, and it's a pure way to live. And, you know, the subtitle of the book is Readings for an Enlightened Life. I had a spiritual teacher, Dr. Thomas Hora, who used to say, there's only two ways we become enlightened, either through wisdom or through suffering. And for most of us, regrettably, it's suffering. But that brings us enlightenment. The great songwriter Leonard Cohen said, there's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in.
Yes, yes. And that's such a valuable lesson to be learned when you've been through difficulties in your life. And if you can really look at it and allow even the suffering to speak to you, it's almost like you shouldn't just try to push it all away. Certainly we need to physically, we need to handle that pain, but there's something spiritually that's happening there also because of this greater struggle that's going on between good and evil in the world in so many ways. And so that suffering has something to teach us. It wants to speak to us in our own language and within our own circumstances so that what's happening to us is really something that can teach us a very valuable lesson.
Yeah, the way it goes in my, experience, Ron, is all of us suffer, but we suffer. Then all of a sudden, everything's good. And then we suffer, and everything's good. And it goes on and on in a spiral, but a spiral goes up and down, but always up eventually, and we become more and more enlightened. And life does get easier if we stick, with our premise that God is love, and those who live in love live in God, and God in them. And I just love the Bible, and I have learned that in my experience that all that Jesus taught us works.
Right, and the follow-up to that is that there's a reflection by Father Richard Rohr on page 92 titled, "There's Something Deeper Happening Here." And he's telling us what he has learned, that if we do not transform our pain, we will most assuredly transmit it, usually to those who are closest to us. And he writes that if only we could see these quote-unquote wounds as a way through, as Jesus did, then they would become sacred wounds rather than scars to deny, disguise, or project onto others.
Yeah, Henry Nouwen, another great spiritual writer like Richard, wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and it said the same thing. We heal others through our wounds. It's not what we say to other people, but it's our presence that we give, to other people. Our love, our compassion, our gratitude, that does all the healing. When a woman touched the hem of Jesus' garment, he said, "It's your faith that saved you," but it was his love that drew her to him and that gave her that faith. So yeah, our wounds heal people.
Yes. Why don't you select the story? I've been selecting more than you.
Oh my God.
And it's your book.
Let me see. It's a big book. It's got a lot of stories. I got it here. I'm opening it. Let's see.
Well, you want me to jump in first of all?
Yeah, you jump in.
While you're doing that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a whole bunch of them, but there are some that speak to me more than they do perhaps to someone else, and that's what we're going to find out this when Miracles Happen by Marianne Williamson.
I love Marianne Williamson.
Where she talks about how our future is going to be determined by who you are as you go through your pain. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that's one of the messages I've just described. It's coming that suffering has something to teach us. And she points out that miracles aren't a quick fix or an easy answer, but they activate what she believes is a spiritual power, divinely authorized to help us, that God is here even in the midst of our suffering, and as you reach out to him, he's going to reach back.
Absolutely. Those are the miracles, and there's no degree of difficulty in miracles like there is in jumping off a diving board, doing a floor exercise. I mean, a small miracle, a big miracle, they come to us when we least expect them. And we have to believe in them. They will come. Now, I just saw my favorite story in the book.
Ah.
You know what it is? It's on page 95. It's A Gift to Exist by Stephen Colbert.
Oh, yeah, Stephen Colbert, right.
Don't you love Stephen Colbert?
The fullness of our humanity.
Yeah, exactly. Stephen Colbert is a very devout Catholic who teaches Sunday school and just a wonderful man. And he was on the Anderson Cooper show one night. And Anderson Cooper had an untimely death, just like Colbert did, and in his family. And Cooper reminded Colbert of another interview on suffering that Colbert had, where he had said that he had come to love the things that I most wish had not happened. And Cooper, holding back tears, because his mother had died, he said, you know, you went on to say, he said to Stephen, what punishments of God are not gifts? Do you really believe that? And Stephen said, yes, it's a gift to exist. And with existence comes suffering. There's no escaping that. I guess I'm either a Catholic or a Buddhist when I say those things, because I've heard those from both traditions. If you are grateful for your life, then you have to be grateful for all of it. You can't pick and choose what you're grateful for. That was on CNN. Mm-hmm. Colbert later added, my tradition, Catholic tradition, that's the great gift of the sacrifice of Christ, that God does it too. You're really not alone. God does it too. God suffers. He suffered on the cross, and he suffers in our suffering. And he helps us, you know, transcend it. And so to hear a guy like Stephen Colbert, a very funny guy, a very socially aware guy, say that on CNN News is just, to me, remarkable.
All right, and he says, so what do you get from your loss? You get awareness of other people's loss. And that was my experience as a young priest. Mm-hmm. As I visited in the hospital in those days, I'm talking about I was ordained in 66. So
hi.
Yes.
I left and got married, as
yes,
you know.
I know.
I was ordained
yes.
in 66.
Right, and then I would go into a hospital. Someone would be coming in for a test mm-hmm. to find out about their pain. And and all of a sudden they'd have to go through some procedure, find out it was a lot worse than they thought, and mm-hmm. then they'd be suffering, and then they would, and before they die, I find this struggle where this person I had formed a kind of a friendship, or at least some kind of a relationship with, mm-hmm. I didn't want to go in there. I felt mm-hmm. like I couldn't mm-hmm. face it.
Yes.
Is this person was going to die or was dying
yes.
even and couldn't talk anymore. But somewhere along the line, I can't remember the specific point at which that happened, except that I was still a young priest.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that there was much, much good to come from suffering. Not that you mm-hmm. want anyone to suffer, mm-hmm. but that there is, again, this spiritual knowledge that mm-hmm. we learn. And Stephen Colbert says it's about the fullness of your humanity. What's the point of being here and being human if you can't be the most human you can be? And that's with your fears, not understanding.
Yes.
He says, I want to be the most human I can be, and that involves acknowledging and ultimately being grateful for things I wish didn't happen, but mm-hmm. they gave me a gift.
Yeah, that's so beautiful, isn't it? And it's also being a young priest and dreading going in the hospital and being so close to death and feeling so helpless to do anything about it, but holding somebody's hand and being with somebody and smiling at somebody. What a gift. How lucky for a priest or anybody who visits a hospital. I like to say that there are seven sacraments in the church, with a big S, but also a small S. And the sacrament of the anointing of the sick is something that we all could do just by visiting somebody in a hospital or a nursing home and giving them a hug or holding them their hand or just listening. And that's the value of suffering, one of the values that gives us that compassion and that empathy.
And, of course, there are lessons that Jesus taught us through the Beatitudes. It's our mm-hmm. caring of other people is really giving something back to us,
mm-hmm.
Part of their very, I don't know if they want to say essence, but part of mm-hmm. themselves, certainly, mm-hmm. is coming mm-hmm. back to us. And I learned there wasn't a better gift that I could possibly receive than visiting with these people at that particular time. I thought I was, it was okay while they were healthy and I could talk. But when I was now struggled with the words and feelings, I had to get over that in order to discover there's more going on here.
And you think that you have to say something to the person. You don't have to say anything. You just have to be with them.
Right.
You know, just like Mary and John were at the foot of Jesus' cross. They didn't say anything, but they were with him. And he was able then to look out at everybody and say, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Well, none of us know what we're doing, and it brings great suffering to us. But if we learn some of the lessons of life in the gospel, you know, our lives become more human and more spiritual.
And let me just make a final comments before we take our next break. Again, Marianne Williamson has written a piece called The Search for God is a Search for Light. And she says, this search for God is a search for light. And outside that light, we are sorrowful indeed. With it, we are healed and made whole. So we're going to take this break now. We'll be back to speak with Michael Lynch about his book, The Way of Suffering.